To start with our Soldiers of Christ Bible study, which if you're not familiar with what we're doing, what that means is we have an interactive Bible study for a few minutes, and then we go right into our worship without much of a break at all, and then we will we end up our worship about the same time, including a short lesson even as a part of the worship. But we're going to do this, have our Soldiers of Christ study, which means what we're looking at is just walking through the life of Jesus a little bit, little at a time. So if you want to turn your Bibles to Matthew chapter 4, that's where we're going to be as we spend some time tonight. But thank you for being here. This will be our last Soldiers of Christ until after summer. There's a few things happening the next few Sunday nights, and then summer hits us, and we usually take a summer break because there's so many folks in and out of town. So we will wait until after summer to pick back up with some of this. So we're going to try to wrap some things up, summarize some things as we finish this tonight. But as we're walking through the life of Jesus, and I know we haven't, how long has it been since we had Soldiers of Christ? A month? It seems like it's been several weeks since we've even been together on this. As we've been walking through this, there's certain things that we're trying to make sure that we pick up as we go, so that we not only remember the stories, but we remember where they are, where they fit, what's going on around them. You know, when you're a child, and part of Soldiers of Christ is for children. We want our children to remember, where was Jesus born? What city was Jesus born in? Bethlehem. What city was Jesus raised in? Nazareth. And so those are good key facts for us to remember. But when we get older, we want to see, why does all of that even matter? Why was Jesus born in Bethlehem? Why was he born in Bethlehem? Because there was a prophecy that said the Messiah had to be born in Bethlehem. Did Joseph and Mary, his parents, live in Bethlehem? Okay. Well, don't you usually like to have your children wherever you live? I mean, ask Brent and Andrea if they like having a baby when they are out of town. That was not very fun. When they were they in North Carolina, South Carolina? You want to be home, right? When you're having a baby, you think Mary would have liked to have been home, closer to home? She doesn't have her OBGYN. She's a completely away. She did the Lamaze classes. I mean, some people miss Lamaze classes, but I mean they had their classes. They know the drills. They know the hospital, and all of a sudden they're out of town. And you know, I'm being facetious by all of that. But when you're in another place, but why? Because there was a prophecy. How did they end up in Bethlehem? Census. And there was, why all of a sudden did they have to go down there? Why did the Roman government all of a sudden decide, you know what, we need to have a census, and we need you to go back to your hometown? Why now? Why all of a sudden now? And there's a variety of answers you might give to that. Let me give you one answer. The providence of God. Did God know the prophecy about Bethlehem? Yeah, he made it. Was God going to work it out for them to get to Bethlehem? Yes, and he did. So when I'm a little kid, what city? Bethlehem, born in Bethlehem. What city was he raised in? Nazareth. When I get older, I need to be able to connect those two and say, wait a minute. God was at work in that. Is God still at work today? Or did he stop? We don't have miracles happening today, so some people think, well, there's not miraculous events, so God's not working anymore. Oh, yes, he is still at work in our lives. And so we're trying, as we go through this, let's pick up some key facts, memorize key facts, know them, but let's put them together and see, how do they fit? So Matthew chapter 4, first 11 verses, what happens in Matthew chapter 4? You got your cheat sheet, it's called your Bible. You got your cheat sheet, what happens in the first 11 verses? Good, the temptations of Jesus. I knew you were thinking, and I read your mind. So the first 11 verses are the temptations of Jesus. All right, and then he begins what we call his Galilean ministry. All right, now, do I have a map? I think I've got a map. So, he's baptized. I know we keep going over this, but I want to make sure we get it. Here's Judea down here. Galilee up north. Samaria in between. Did the Jews like going through Samaria? No way, Jose. or anybody else. They go over here on the east side of the Jordan and cross over. They don't want to go through Samaria. But down here, here's your Bethlehem. Where's Nazareth? Is Nazareth in the same neighborhood? I mean, it's like Palm Beach Gardens and North Palm Beach, right? I mean, they're right next to each other? No, I don't think so. Here's Bethlehem of Judea down here. Here's Nazareth way up here. They're not anywhere close to each other. How would you like to be pregnant and ride a donkey down there? That would be fun, right? No, I don't believe it would be. So, what was I even talking about? Oh, Matthew chapter 4. So Jesus is baptized down here in the Jordan, tempted in the wilderness here. And then Jesus heads up to Galilee. And Jesus spends a lot of time preaching up in Galilee. And so that's where we are in Matthew chapter 4, when Jesus comes across some men who are fishing. What are the name of the four men who are fishing on the Sea of Galilee? Peter, Andrew, James, and John. All right, you got that, David? Four men fishing on the Sea of Galilee. Peter, Andrew, James, and John. I used to think that they were the only guys that were out there. They weren't. Josephus indicates that around that time, that fishing, there would have been more than 300 fishing boats on the Sea of Galilee. It wasn't just, Jesus didn't just come across, oh, look, here's some fishermen. What a day. There were fishermen all over the place. All right, so what I want us to look at tonight is this idea of, some people use this term of discipleship, which is a term that can be kind of vague. What does that even mean? But what does it mean to be a disciple of Jesus? When you hear the word disciple, what does that word mean? A follower, okay? So a disciple of Jesus is somebody who follows him. What else does the word mean? Not just a follower, a student, a learner. So there is Josh sang the Builder song in Promotion Sunday this morning. Y'all know the Builder song? Wise man built his house. Now, what made the wise man the wise man? He did two things. He heard the sayings of Jesus, number one, and then he did it. What made the foolish man the foolish man? Two things. He heard the sayings of Jesus and didn't do them. What's the difference between a wise man and a foolish man? Doing and not doing. So, and when we're thinking about that Builder song, that's what it is. Josh talked about that's our foundation. It's not just hearing what Jesus says, but doing it. That's what a disciple is. A disciple is a learner. He hears. He's a student. And then he is a doer. He is a follower. So, how many weeks ago were we? I don't even know how many weeks ago we were together. Weeks ago, we got through these first two ideas, and then I want to finish this list, and then we're going to get right into our worship. In order to be a disciple of Jesus, there's Jesus' part, and there's our part. We're not talking about our part so much. We're going to talk a little bit about it, but we're talking about what's Jesus' part in us becoming a disciple. And we see all of this right here in Matthew chapter 4, because this is when Jesus is calling, sometimes what we call calling his first disciples, but really, this happened earlier. Was this the first time that Peter, Andrew, James, and John had met Jesus? Shake your head. Just shake your head this way. Is this the first time that Peter, Andrew, James, and John met Jesus? No, it's not. Good answer. All right. When was the first time they met him? Good. John chapter 1 is the first time that we have recorded anyway that they met Jesus. Who introduced them? Who introduced Peter, Andrew, James, and John to Jesus? Who introduced you to your significant other? Did somebody introduce you, or did you all just like... Their parents? That's a good answer. So, are parents responsible for introducing children to Jesus? Yeah, they're responsible. Is it the Bible class teacher's responsibility to introduce the kids to Jesus? Well, hopefully their parents have already introduced them. Have you ever met somebody for like a second or third time, but you had already met them before? And you walk up to them and you introduce yourself and you're like, oh, I already met. I do it all the time. I introduce myself to people and they're like, yeah, I met you a few weeks ago. I'm like, hello. You know, embarrassment. I should have remembered, right? So you introduce yourself to somebody else until you get to know them. Now, Peter, Andrew, James, and John, they're kind of introduced to Jesus here on the Sea of Galilee, but they had already been introduced before. There was a guy who did some baptizing, and he pointed out to Peter, Andrew, James, and John, and he said, "Behold the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world." What was that guy's name who did some baptizing? John the Baptizer. His name's John. He introduces them back in John chapter 1. So, this is not the first time, but Jesus is walking along the Sea of Galilee. And in order to become a disciple, Jesus initiates the relationship. I find that fascinating. Back in that day, students usually sought out their teachers, not the other way around. What's happening here? The teacher is seeking out his students. Jesus initiates the relationship. Did Jesus initiate the relationship with us, or did we initiate it? While we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. He initiated the relationship. Jesus identifies people who are going to follow after him. Who did he choose? Did he pick the lazy guys who were just sitting over there under the shade tree, enjoying and relaxing during the day? Who did he choose? Busy guys. What were they doing? They were fishing, had been fishing. Now what were they doing? When he meets them in John chapter 4, what are they doing when Jesus finds them? In verse 18, there Peter and Andrew are casting the net. And then go down to verse 21. What are James and John doing? Fixing their nets. So some are fishing, some are mending. They are engaged in activity, and Jesus says, that's the kind of people I want. People who are already busy, people who are already working. If Jesus wanted to choose a disciple today, would he choose me and you? Would he say, oh, they're already busy? Or would he say, oh, well, you know, David's just sitting over there doing nothing. He doesn't have anything better to do. Okay, David, come over here. He didn't pick people who didn't have anything better to do. He picked people who were already hard workers. That's who Jesus wants as his disciples. All right, we already dealt with those two. Number three, Jesus positions his disciples. What does that mean? Jesus said, and you might not have this word in this passage, but it's going to be in some other passages. Jesus said to follow after me. Can you get a picture of some ducks walking in a row? Is there a leader out there in the front? And you see that mama duck who's out there, and the little cute ducklings? What happens? How can the ducklings be so cute and then end up not being so cute? Caleb, what happened? I mean, they're so cute. They're like little yellow fuzzballs, and then they grow up, and they look like a duck. What happened? All right, off track, different story. All right, so get your mind. You got the mama duck, and you got the little baby ducks. Are they walking in a line? Are they following the leader? Do you all still walk in a line to go to, like, the cafeteria, to go to the library? You walk in a line? What was that, Stephen? No. All right, so that's the difference between elementary school and high school, right? Okay, so that's the difference between this morning. The kids coming up and talking into the mic, and the other kids walk. Okay, so difference in kids. All right, so what was our point here? All right, so are there still line leaders at school? Do you have line leaders? You have jobs. Awesome. So you've got the line leader. And so that's your job that day, is to be the line leader, and everybody else is supposed to follow. All right, in our relationship with Jesus, who's the line leader? Oh, that's Jesus. That's not me. Do we sometimes get those roles reversed? Do we sometimes want to be the line leader and have Jesus kind of follow in behind us and approve and agree with what's going on? Oh, Jesus will be okay with this. Or do we surrender and say, no, Jesus is the authority here. Jesus is the sovereign Lord. I didn't get to those last, is it five words? I can't count the words. I didn't get to those last words in Acts 10 and verse 36 in the sermon this morning. Last word of that, Acts 10 and verse 36 says, he is Lord of all. How many words is that? Five? Who's he Lord of? Everybody. Of all. So, everybody, right? So, is he Lord of my life? When Jesus is looking for disciples, he's not looking for me to be the line leader. Not over him. He's looking for me to follow after him. To get behind him, to surrender myself to him, and to attach myself to him. What happens if a little duckling gets separated from the mama duck? It gets lost. Can you picture that little duckling lost? What? He could get hurt. Or stolen. Wouldn't want that. So what does that little duckling need to do above everything else? What does that not just follow after, but to stay close to and attached? Levi, what you got, bud? Say it again. He's got to find his mommy. When that little duckling gets lost, what's the most important thing? Finding mom, getting that connection back. When Jesus says, follow me, do we need to be attached? Connected? What if we veer off course? What's the most important thing? Getting back on course and attaching ourselves to him and getting back where he wants us to be. Jesus positions us, not before him, but after him. Now, this is kind of tied into this, but look at what he says. Who does he say to follow? Does he say to follow John the Baptist?
Follow Jesus.
Follow Jesus. Jesus says, follow me. The word follow doesn't just mean get in line, buddy, but it means to do what I do, to imitate me, to pattern yourself after me. Is that hard sometimes? Do we like to pattern ourselves after others? We like to fit in. We like to others to accept us, and so we allow ourselves to be poured into a certain pattern or mold to go along with. And Jesus says, here's your pattern, here's your mold. Is it going to look like everybody else? If I pattern my life after Jesus, is it going to look like everybody else? It's going to look different. Are people going to know that I look different? I mean, So, Stephen, if you went to school tomorrow and you walk into school and you've got a loud red and pink plaid suit on, all right? Yeah, I'm sure you've got one of those in your closet. You've got a jacket and you've got pants that are just plaid red and pink, all right? Would anybody notice you? I mean, maybe. I don't know. Maybe everybody else in school's got red, plaid, and pink or whatever. Would anybody notice you, or would it be like, oh, well, you know, he just kind of blends in with everybody else? If I live the Christian life, do I blend in? I don't blend in. Now, is it my purpose to blaringly stand out and push myself? No. But should I look different? Should people say, there's something about him, something about her. She doesn't talk like everybody else. Doesn't laugh at the same jokes that everybody else does. Doesn't go to the same places we do. And it's not necessarily that we're just blasting ourselves at them, but by our conduct. 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 12, Titus chapter 2 verses 8 and 9, all over the place in the New Testament. If I live my life in holy conduct, people who want to say something bad about me will be like, I can't say anything bad about them. And they might be put to silence when they see us living out our holy conduct. So Jesus says, position yourself where? In front of him? No, after me. Pattern yourself after me. So that's in verse chapter 4, verse 19. Follow me, and I will make you what? Fishers of men. Now, I think we said this the last time we were talking about this. Some of you I know go fishing, right, Paul? Some of you go fishing. I'll ask Lisa. Lisa, is Paul's style of fishing, is it hard work? Maybe I shouldn't ask a wife. That's not a fair question. Is that hard kind of fishing? It's leisure. I mean, I've never been fishing with Paul. Josh, you've been fishing with Paul, right? I mean, would you say it's leisure, or is Paul, yeah, okay, he says it's leisure, Paul. So you know, you're out there to have fun, all right? Where Peter and Paul, not Peter and Paul, Peter, Andrew, James, and John, are they out there to have fun? Well, sure. I mean, fishing is fun. They're working, right? So Jesus says, hey, come over here, and I'm going to give you a leisurely life where you don't have to do anything. Forget that fishing for fish stuff. Come over here and fish for men, because they're a lot easier to catch, right? Are men a lot easier to catch than fish? No? Why not? They're not easier to catch? What is required to catch? Ladies, don't misunderstand. I'm going to ask this question, then I'm going to qualify it. What is required to catch a man? For Jesus, okay? What's required to catch a man for Jesus? To convert somebody? What's required for that? You've got to convince them. How do you convince them? Say it again.
They have to make a choice.
They have to make a choice. What's involved in that? What do I need to do? I've got to teach them. In order to teach them, what does that require of me? I've got to learn. I've got to study. All of a sudden, this is work. I've got to study. I've got to learn. I've got to talk. I've got to teach. I've got to give them, here's your choices. Why are you faltering between two opinions? Choose this or choose this. That involves effort. But once I do it, right? Once I do it, everybody's going to accept it. They're going to grab a hold of it. They're going to bite onto the bait, as it were. And I will catch everybody once I study and learn and teach and convince. Everybody's going to accept it, right? Novell, you ever been fishing? Real fishing. You ever been fishing and not caught anything? You've been fishing and not caught anything? About every time I go. Why do you keep going fishing? This is like a legitimate question for me, okay? So why do you keep going fishing if you keep not catching anything? What an answer. Boy, you're my favorite person now. Lucas was a minute ago, but now Novell is. The anticipation of catching something. Has anybody ever rejected you in your attempts to catch them for Jesus? Lots of times, right? Why do you keep going and trying again with somebody else? The anticipation of catching somebody for Jesus. Is that hard work? That's what Jesus enrolled us to do. He took these guys who were trying to get fish out of the water and into the boat, and now he's trying to get guys to get people out of the world and into the kingdom. And he says it's going to involve much the same process. Real quick, let me put this up here, and then we're going to get into our worship. Jesus equips the disciple for the work. Follow me, and what's the next word? Follow me, comma, and it's a little word. It has this many letters. Follow me, and I will do what? Make you. And if you go over to Mark's version, Mark's account of this in Mark chapter 1 and verse 17, he says, follow me and I will make you become. So once I'm baptized, I'm like a perfect fisherman, fully equipped. I've got all the gear and I'm ready to go, right? Or do I need to become a fisher of men? How do I become a fisherman? Jesus says, I will make you. How often do we think it's all about us? I've got to learn. I've got to study. I've got to teach. I've got to convince. I. Who is saying the word I in Matthew 4 and verse 19? Jesus. He equips us with everything that we need. And if somebody doesn't want what we have to offer them, that's not our fault. But we need to keep doing it in anticipation of finding somebody who does want it. That's what's involved on the Jesus side. Jesus's part in making us disciples. Perhaps after the summer, if we get back on this, we'll talk about, okay, what's my part in this?